Hi, everybody, and welcome to our Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. I'm Hub Arkish, along with my partners, former Bears and Dolphins head coach Dave Wannstedt and NFL and College Football Hall of Famer Dan Hampton. Guys, there will still be a lot more big stories, but for the most part, the best free agent talent has now signed new contracts, and this feels like the right week for us to start focusing on the draft a little bit. It's now just 5 weeks off. We've seen this as the quarterback draft for almost 2 or 3 years already, and that hasn't really changed with as many as possibly 6 quarterbacks going in the first round. But the focus is still very much on Caleb Williams and whether or not the Bears will take him number one or trade the pick to another quarterback needy team that will use the pick on him. Dan, you guys already know I like Williams a lot, but I don't think he'll be the best quarterback taken in this draft, and I'll talk about that in a little while. But I know our audience wants to know what you guys think. So, Dan, what do you think of Caleb Williams? Is he the best prospect in this draft? And if not, which quarterback do you like more?
Okay. About three different things happened in the not-so-distant past. And some of it was on Wednesday. The Chicago Bears show up in L.A. and they do the on-campus workout with Williams. He dazzled. But more than that, what happened a week ago today? The Chicago Bears who traded an extra number one to move up just 3 years ago to draft Justin Fields, basically unloads him for a song. And it was on a Friday before St. Patrick's Day in Chicago when nobody would be watching the wire and making a big stink, because the Bears knew that there was a groundswell of support for Justin Fields. He had become kind of like a cult hero. And despite the fact he was 10 and 28 as a starter in the NFL, and you could say, oh, well, he didn't have any help, he didn't have a defense, he didn't. Well, he was 10 and 28. But the thing that all of this, and it's kind of like dominoes tumbling, is they were clearing the decks for Caleb Williams. And why were they doing that? Why were they unloading a first-round draft pick that you gave an extra number one to move up to get him that had been a starter for some 40 games or whatever? Why were you basically shoving him out the back door as fast as you could when nobody was watching? Because they are under the mindset that – And let's think about, okay, and I think a lot of you guys know that in a reluctant way, I have basically anointed Patrick Mahomes, baby Jesus in the NFL. And I went back and looked just a minute ago. On Christmas Day this past year, the Kansas City Chiefs lose to the Las Vegas Raiders. Think about that. The Super Bowl, a month and a half before they lose to the Raiders. The Raiders were disarray. They got their coach fired. They benched their quarterback. And yet, that team, and you give Andy Reid a lot of credit, I got it, but Patrick Mahomes waved his wand. They stopped jumping off sides. They stopped dropping passes. They stopped getting holding calls. Their defense picked. The Bears think that, and guess where Ryan Poles came from? Dave, Ryan Poles saw, he was standing there in Kansas City the day that Mahomes was drafted, and he saw the transformation. He knows, in his heart of hearts, he knows that is the fastest, best way to transform the program is to find another baby Jesus. And I got to tell you, I've watched about, 2 hours of tape on Williams. And he's the closest thing I've seen to Mahomes in the last 10 years. So without anything else being said, I think the Bears, they've shoved their chips in, and it's going to be Caleb Williams, and we'll see where it goes.
Go ahead, Dave. It's interesting to me that all the talk about Williams is off the field. Nobody is challenging his on-the-field talent. He had his pro day this week, and he showed that on-the-field talent is real. It's just people worried about the off-the-field stuff, I think.
Yeah, and how can you argue with 120 touchdowns in 3 years? I mean, that's insane. And, 90 in the last two, and I think only 10 or 12 turnovers. So, I mean, the guy, you got to give him credit for that. One point on Fields that I think needs to be made, because we've said on this show here, And I think I said it on Pro Football Weekly on TV, on our weekly show, that in my mind, quarterbacks are judged by you're down by 10 with 6 minutes to go. Do you have a guy that can bring you back and score twice like J.J. McCarthy did against Alabama and win the game? That's what separates quarterbacks in my mind. Matt Eberflus, this is the only point I want to make, and I'm going to got some good stuff on Caleb, is when Matt Eberflus at the combine walked to the podium and said, we evaluate quarterbacks by what they do in the fourth quarter. That told me that they were washing their hands and they moved on. Because now every GM and every head coach and every fan in Chicago went right to the internet and typed in Justin Fields' fourth quarter stats, and they were terrible. So, I mean, I think it, you know, he's trying to do right by Justin, but I think he held his cards a little bit too long. Nobody was going to trade for him, so he was going to cut him. If he kept him to the draft, it was going to be another distraction. It's going to be taking away energy from the draft, and they weren't going to get anything for him. So that's done. Now with Caleb, you know, the big thing with Caleb, and I've talked to two or three offensive coordinator ex-head coaches that have really watched this stuff close, and, you know, the guy at USC didn't play great against big teams. He really didn't. I mean, if we're honest about it, and you look at his stats against the Utahs of the world and, I don't know, Oregon, Washington, pick any of the top four teams. He was good, not great, not dominant. And that concerns me a little bit, but the main reason that was a consensus was Caleb Williams does not appreciate the check down. You know, by the check down, I'm talking about when the deep ball's covered and you're out on the edge, you know, if you can't run, hit the back, hit the tight end. He didn't do any of minimum of that at USC. And we were going through the tape. There was like four of us, and they were doing the talking because they're the quarterback experts. And they said, look, guys are covered down the field, and he throws it out of the back of the end zone. Or he, you know, or he scrambles and gets hit, you know, for 4 yards when the back was open or the tight end was open for the check down. So I think that's going to be that's the real only football negative, if you want to call it a negative, that I would see, guys, is that he got to take the money, as I used to always tell my quarterbacks, take the easy money, a la Patrick Mahomes. Learned that. What do you throw, three passes? Hamp, you're talking about Mahomes, three passes that were a yard to 2 yards to Kelsey in the playoffs, and we've seen Tom Brady do that for the last 20 years, take the money. So, you know, that's where that's at. Off the field, you know, the only thing that bothers me, you're all in on this guy. Now, it's great that they had dinner with him. They met him at the combine. They went out early to L.A., I'm told. They had a great night with him, dinner. So, all, you know, the more times that they can get face-to-face with him, and I've gone through this. I mean, I remember flying to Huntington, West Virginia to sit down, me and Mark Hatley. God bless him, to sit down and have a dinner with Randy Moss when we were really considering Randy Moss. The more face-to-face you can get with these guys, the stronger you're going to feel, the better you're going to feel. So I think that they're trying to make that happen. The last thing I'll say is with the off-the-field stuff, and I mentioned this last week. We had two number one picks at Dallas. We took Troy Aikman and Russell Maryland, both of those. Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson had, I'm going to say a handshake, it wasn't maybe physically handshake, but had verbal agreements that we were real close and we could get this contract done and he would be there day one as the face of the program with the number one pick in the draft, both those guys. And I don't know where that's at when you don't have an agent. That concerns me a little bit. You don't want to put all the chips in, as you said, Hamp, and then the guy decides that he wants, you know, more money than any. We got a rookie salary cap. This is it. Well, I want more. I mean, you know, who knows? I hope not. I hope not. That's the only thing that I'm a little antsy about. And I was talking to Jimmy Johnson about that, and he was reflecting back on the Russell Maryland thing. And because Russell wasn't the best player in that whole draft of number one. You know, there wasn't a great quarterback that year. I think Drunken Miller who went to the 49ers at 10 or something. But there were other great players. And Jimmy just felt like there was a need there and the contract would be done the minute we drafted him, and he would be in the weight room the next day. There's something to that that we got to work through, I think, with Caleb Williams moving forward.
Yeah, you know, we've learned from his pro day this week, there's nothing negative about Caleb Williams as a football player, you know, on the field. And there's, by the way, nothing negative about Caleb Williams off the field. What we found out this week, hearing from his teammates seem to love him. He seems to have great leadership ability. He does most of the things you want from, maybe all the things you want from a franchise quarterback. The questions are more about the off the field stuff, the family involvement, the things that we've heard. And I have nothing negative to say about his dad either. I'm sure his dad is trying to do the best he can for his son, but for him not to have an agent at this point, knowing he's going to be the number one pick and not to be getting the help and assistance, I think that's a concern for a number of teams. Doesn't matter if it's a concern for me or not. But again, we'll get back to the quarterbacks and, you know, who's going number one in a little while.
But one second. I there's two things I'd like to tag on what Dave said, and so many really, really good points. But guys, we're in different territory, uncharted water, with the NIL money, with him being on the stage in Hollywood. It's not like he was, you know, he's, you know, doing this from Lincoln, Nebraska. He has been in the fishbowl now for 2-3 years. He has been a megastar, and all of the things that, you know, back in the old days, oh, well, we wonder what will happen when he gets, you know, to the NFL and he actually gets some money and he gets some, you know, TV time. And he starts to, you know, start having this self-inflated sense of worth. That's already happened. This kid, he thinks he's already had to deal with all of those issues that a lot of guys don't, you know, maybe J.J. McCarthy. You know, Ann Arbor is a long, long way from Hollywood and winning the Heisman and that stage and all that. And yes, your point was dead on that some, you know, the Notre Dame game is going to be the wart on the back of his neck the rest of his life. But I think a lot of those things, and Hub, your issue about the agent, sure, there could be, you know, a normalcy about how they're going to go down this road together. But, you know, I think this kid, he kind of thinks he's a trailblazer and why should I give 5% away? And I don't need to. One thing real quick. And guys, you brought up Justin Fields again, Dave, you know, for them to unload him, I maintained at the end of last season, I've made up my mind. They should, yes, they're going to get Caleb Williams at no matter what. But why unload Justin for a sixth round pick? You guys know, sixth round pick is like a case of hot beer. You know, you don't throw it out. But how many of those make a difference? How many of those make a team? Not many. All I'm saying is, if Caleb Williams wants to play megastar and hold out, boy, that puts the Bears behind the eight ball, doesn't it? Now, if you would have kept Justin Fields, that would have almost ensured he didn't hold out. And think about this. Maybe he struggles. Maybe Justin starts the first game or two and does excellent. Wouldn't his draft value be so much more if another Aaron Rodgers injury occurs, if Kirk Cousins re-tears his Achilles, I just think Ryan Poles got schooled on how he is handling this, but I think we all know why he's doing what he's doing.
Hey, Dan, I'm glad you referenced Lincoln, Nebraska, not Little Rock, Arkansas.
Nobody's playing in Little Rock, Arkansas.
You know, guys, it's been the quarterback draft for so long because of Caleb Williams. We've been talking about him for a couple of years, and there's at least two, maybe three more who all could be franchise quarterbacks. But the reality is the wide receiver class in this draft may actually be more talented than the quarterbacks, with at least four guaranteed to go in the first round and high in the first round, and there could be as many as seven you know, Dave, like the quarterbacks and Williams, there is no question Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best quarterback prospect in this draft. He's probably the number one overall prospect. But then you go to Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. and Ladd McConkie and Adonai Mitchell. You know, and by the way, all of these guys except two are 6'3 or bigger and 215 pounds. I mean, these guys are remarkable prospects. And yet it always still somehow comes back to Harrison that he may be the best player in this draft. And, you know, Dave, I'm curious for your analysis or breakdown on Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, he's, I think everything you said, I you know, I was doing Big Ten. I do a TV show every week. So I watch this kid play every game. And I was trying to compare him to Larry Fitzgerald, you know, one of my Pitt guys. And, you know, Larry had a few more touchdowns. I think Larry had 22 touchdowns. This kid only had 14, but Larry was the only thing that we had at Pitt where he had a lot of other great players. So he did the things kind of that Larry did. You know, because he's so big and because he's so strong, I think his speed is deceiving. You know, when Larry Fitzgerald came out and went to the pros, they said he would have to, because he was big, and they weren't sure if he's that long strider. That's a little bit how Harrison is in my mind. He'd have to be an X receiver. Well, it didn't take long before they started playing Larry Fitzgerald in the slot. So I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. can play anywhere, really, that you want him to. But I think, you know, I think in the red zone, I think down there is where the guy separates himself from others because of his intangibles, you know, his 210 pounds. I mean, he can play inside, he can play outside. He's 6'3". He's got a mature background because of his father playing in the league, you know, all those years at Indy. So I don't know what you say. You know, I think the kid will block. I mean, you know, right away, everybody wants to look at receivers and say, well, they give the effort to block. But I think this kid does it all. I don't know what you can say except, you know, if you draft him. Get him on your team.
You know, Dan, what's so interesting to me about Harrison Jr., it's just like the Williams, you know, situation with his dad. It's not the same situation, but his dad very involved too, because he was a great NFL player. And what's interesting about it with Williams is he brings so much to him to now play the same position. He knows everything there is to know about it. And all the potential negatives that come with Williams' dad, potential negatives, are the opposite with Harrison. I mean, this kid was born to be, you know, the first or second pick in this draft.
I don't know. Obviously he is a tremendous, tremendous talent. But back to what you opened with on this little point of topic, I can see the top three picks being quarterbacks. And I'm going back. Guys, I looked at The Athletic. They have a favorite right now where you could bet on who is going to win next year's Super Bowl, okay? And shock of shocks, who is number one on The Athletic's odds board? It's Kansas City. Now, the last time I checked the free agent deal, and they haven't had the draft yet, but Kansas City, you know, who do they sign? Nobody. They re-signed Chris Jones, and they put their corner on the franchise, but they lost, you know, Nick Allegretti, offensive guard, that played really great, and they've lost a couple of receivers. I think Marquise Brown, they signed him. But they're still the favorite. Why? Why? Because they've got the gold. They've got the quarterback. And as good as Harrison is, I just think, you know, your point about, you know, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, you know, I mean, these guys, with every year and every game that Patrick Mahomes, and back to my point, on Christmas Day, they were 9-6. How many times your team's been 9-6, Coach, and you're feeling in your heart of hearts, we ain't got a chance this year? You know, I mean, 9-6 is pretty good, but they're it's definitely not a situation where they were in control of their destiny. And yet, Patrick, they didn't lose again because of that guy at that position. So I just think, you know, Harrison, obviously great player. I'll be shocked if these quarterbacks, and as you said, there's a chance that there could be seven in the first round. it may be the wave of the future. Everybody desperately seeking, you know, the next one that's going to take them to the promised land.
Well, and I'll tell you guys, yeah, that kind of jumps out at this one a little bit for me is, again, I said it at the top, the size of these guys. You look at Harrison, 6'4", 205, Odunze, 6'3", 215. You've got Brian Thomas Jr., 6'4", 205. Mitchell is 6'4", 196. There may not be four receivers that big in the league right now, and yet they're all coming out, and it just adds so much to their value. But let's move on a little bit, and I try each week to give each of you, Dan and Dave, a chance to talk about what you've been most interested in this week, and we'll start with you, Dave. What are the stories coming out this week that you think are the biggest and the most intriguing about around the NFL?
Well, we talked, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, about the proposed rule changes. And we all know, we talked about how this happens, and a lot of them are just frustration. And I've been part of that, where we get beat by a pass interference penalty at the end of the game to knock us out of the playoffs. So we're going to make a new rule, and we're going to submit it to the competition committee that we want to eliminate pass interference and make it a 5-yard penalty. Okay. So coaches and owners and general managers get emotional and make up a lot of these rule changes, and they submit them all. So I talked about, the kickoff being changed because of safety. I think that is probably 50-50 to get passed. The league meetings start this Sunday, okay? The league meetings, coaches, NFL, general managers, owners. And the two, and I'm not going to go through them. I'm going to go through the two that people were telling me have the strongest feeling that could change. And the first one, and I don't know how this, it's the hip drop tackle. And that's the one where when we got away from putting our head across to make a tackle, which I did and Hamp did a lot more than I did, when they wanted for safety reasons to keep the head on the backside of the offensive player, then the only way you could get him on the ground was grab him. You're basically grabbing a guy running away from you with one arm and pull him down onto the ground. And with that happening, they charted it, and there was one injury a week that they came up with that was credited to, that they call it the hip drop, where they're grabbing him, pulling him down, and on top of them, and you saw the ankle injuries, the Pollard, there's a couple of them that came out that were more recognizable. But they said there was one injury a week, and doctors and trainers turned this info in. So they're looking at it. Now, here's the catch. It's going to be officiated by the officials, okay? So I don't know how an umpire who watches the holding calls or the referee who's watching the quarterbacks is going to be able to see this quick enough, because it's a spur of the moment. When the guy makes a horse collar, you can see it. He's out in the open running away from you, where these are in-line plays. This is going to be very difficult, but they are, I think, going to put it in another, quote, safety measure to try to help the players stay safe. So whether and how often it gets called, we'll have to see. The other one that I think is a pretty good one, and Detroit submitted this one. Right now, we all know that each team gets two challenges. If you miss a challenge, you cost you a timeout. But if you use your first two challenges, the first series of the game, you don't get any more. That's it. It's over. What they are proposing, that if you are correct on one or both of your first two challenges, they will give you a third one. So they're going to reward you for being precise on when you challenge. It seems to have a little bit of juice to that, if you are correct on it, that you would have another challenge in the back pocket. It wouldn't change the last 2 minutes of a game or the last 2 minutes of a half, where everything is challenged in the press box, but it would just be during the other parts of the game other than the end of the half end of the game. So that one seems to be pretty simple. The one that got thrown out right away is somebody submitted, I got it right here, that they wanted to make call on the field penalties. So they wanted the referee to make, if he called holding and they reviewed it. I'm sorry, they want to review on the field plays and then make a call on it. So now the referee misses a holding call. Okay, and they see it on the tape. Oh, come back. We're going to throw a flag. That one got trashed. Don't worry about that. But the two that I think are going to happen, the kickoff in some capacity will change, kickoff return. I think the extra challenge, if you get one or both of your two correct early. And then I think the big one they're talking about is this hip drop tackle.
You know, Dan, Dave got me right at the start when he said that they were talking about changing pass interference to a five-yard penalty. I don't think there is a worse call in the NFL than pass interference. And I shouldn't say worse, but more inconsistently called. You never know what you're getting. You can't make it a five-yard penalty because if it happens on a 20-yard throw, you're telling the defensive back, commit pass interference because you could save 20 yards and get five. So that just wasn't going to happen. But your thoughts on what Dave said about the other rules?
Well, two things. Number one, you're exactly right. And you just went through the litany of the size of the premier receivers coming out. How's a 6-foot cornerback going to, you know, jam Odunze? I mean, the guy will throw him on the ground like a linebacker. And again, do you remember one of the best coaching jobs Bill Belichick ever accomplished was when he beat the Rams, and essentially it was they mugged the receivers all day. And they just said, hey, we'll take the penalty. You're not going to, you know, beat us on a streak. And you're going to – obviously you'll see that. But back to your – this kicking game tampering, that gives me the creeps. I think I kind of like what they're doing now. And this is from a guy that never had to cover a kick or block on the kickoff team, never. But I kind of think it's pretty good. But the hip tackle – yes, just like the horse collar, even as a defender, you know, I think that those two maneuvers, they need to be outlawed because, you know, I mean, again, once a week you get somebody hurt with it. I mean, that's obviously something that has to be addressed. One of the things that I touched on just about 15 minutes ago was I am fascinated. I am now with after what a week, 10 days of free agency, and every team essentially at their discretion having their own opportunities to explore the route, the direction they want to take their team, their franchise, their roster. Now, when all the dust has settled and all the players have moved and all that, I am again, as a you know guy that kind of likes to gamble a little bit, I look for opportunities to bet against Kansas City, but it just drives you crazy because you know who you can't beat him. But for me, I brought it up a minute ago. After all of the free agent moves, I looked at the Super Bowl odds of all these teams. Now you can have Kansas City and San Francisco, one. Two or, you know, or Frisco one and Kansas City two, whatever. But to me, San Francisco, they got worse. Think about it. They lost both of their starting defensive tackles. Armstead and Kinlaw signed other places, and Aiyuk probably is going to be gone. And all three of those are in the top 12 players on their team in my mind. So that, I don't see how they're going to be as good. A couple of teams that really helped themselves, Detroit. Detroit, coach, I remember last year after the draft, we asked, okay, who would get – you said Detroit probably had the best draft class of anyone. And, you know, and I got to tell you, you were correct. And the guy that you didn't really mention that much was a tight end. I can't remember his name. The rookie was made all pro. He was amazing. But they signed DJ Reader and about five other guys on defense, couple of corners, and we all know, you know, they need an extra corner with what happened this week down in Miami. But the Texans right now are in the top five in the NFL Super Bowl winning odds. Now, Hub, have you ever seen a team go through that type of a transformation where they were basically – the 30th ranked team in football a year ago today, and now with another good draft, they could be in position to make a run at the Super Bowl.
You know, we've seen other teams, you know, go from worst to first, but it's because of the quarterback. And I really don't remember, you know, a rookie quarterback playing quite like, you know, they did in Houston this year. And so I think that's a big part of it. You know, guys, the other thing to me that's interesting about this draft, I don't ever remember this happening, but there is a third position in addition to the quarterbacks and wide receivers in the competition for the deepest position in this draft, and that's on the offensive line where there's a ton of talent, particularly at offensive tackle. Now, Joe Alt, offensive tackle from Notre Dame, is probably going to be the first one off the board, just like we know with Williams and we know with Harrison. But then you go on, you look at Troy Fatanu and J.C. Latham and Talese Fuaga and Amaeus Wims and Olu Fashanu, Patrick Maul. I can go on and on. That's seven guys who could go in the first round. And you know, Hamp, I've got to start with you on this one because you spent, 10, 12 years, you know, preparing to play against these guys. When you evaluate offensive linemen and tackles, what are you looking for that makes them the best and the hardest to beat from the offensive line?
Well, they're all gifted with great size. They're all 6'5", 6'7", somewhere in there, 310, 320. Okay, they got all that. Now, balance and to me, in an abstract way, all we do is talk about the quarterback, and that's all I've been ranting about today is how important the quarterback – well, who – I used to say this. Okay, Buddy Ryan actually is the one that kind of beat it. Who's the most important player on the field? Real quick, I don't know if I ever told you this story, Dave, but every year Buddy would tell it. Maybe after a while he kind of got away from it. But he would say, the reason that I came up with the 46 defense is because it's essentially the best and most effective and efficient way for us to pressure the quarterback. And the Detroit Lions would be in the Super Bowl this year if they could have protected their quarterback better in the third and fourth quarter. There were six times the 49ers blitzed, and all six times they got pressure on Jared Goff, and he threw it away. It was an incompletion. So, yes, the most important position, he was on the 69 Jet team. And every year, Weeb Eubank would have first day in camp. He'd say, hey, welcome in, and I'd settle down. Okay, let's get going here, boys. He goes, first things first, I want to introduce our quarterback. Joe, stand up. And everybody go, ooh, you know, Joe Namath. And anyway, he said, all right, Joe, sit down. He says, all right, that's the most important guy on the field. If Joe gets hurt, then we're all going to lose our job. You understand that? Okay, let's go on to the second point. Well, Buddy said that made such an impression on him. If the quarterback is hurt or the quarterback is under duress, then it's a completely different scenario. So as a defensive coach, why don't I put a maxim on pressuring quarterbacks? Well, essentially, that is why these offensive tackles, because, yeah, you know, they're chipping so much more now, and especially when you get against Max Crosby, a lot of people are game planning to, you know, keep the tight end and give him a pop before they go out, all that. But still, it matters. But yet, back to the offensive tackle. How much better is Travis Kelce if he doesn't have to pop the defensive end, if he doesn't have to stay in and chip? How much better is he if he can run an unhindered route? So every year the quarterback gets more important. Every year the offensive tackle gets more important.
You know, Dave, I have no idea at this point how many offensive linemen and offensive tackles you drafted over the years. But when you look at, you know, Alt and Fatano and Latham and Mims, they're all going in the first round. So as you looked at that group, what were you looking at as the most important thing to cause you to take one over the other?
Well, a little bit like Hamp said, you know, your tackle's got to be better in space. So whether it's right tackle or left tackle, you know, you're not going to have somebody bumping you. You're going to have the guard, but on the outside, you're probably going to be by yourself, you know, 80, 90% of the time. So it's just athleticism would be the only thing. But I kind of disagree a little bit with Hamp that I think back in the day when I was coaching, we were about 25% three-step. We were about 50% five-step drop by the quarterback, which put us back there at 5 yards. And then we were 25%. This is Ron DeLigno at seven-step drops. You know, 7 steps, you're getting back there 6-7 yards. And that's when I think tackles really, really were valuable. Now you look at it's 3-step. No one's using 7-step anymore. It's 3-step, 1, 2, 3, gone. Shotgun, gone. You know, they're usually at 4 or 5 steps on a shotgun snap. So I think, we wouldn't even talk about drafting a center or guard early back in the day. Nowadays, I'll tell you what, I think they're as valuable as the tackles. And I'm a little bit out there on this maybe, but I wouldn't have a problem if a team had a big offensive line need and you took a center with the first pick of not the first pick of the draft, but if you took a center in the first round, in the second half of the first round, and he plays 10 years for you, I'll tell you what, all the teams that are winning got great interior offensive linemen. So, I kind of lump them all together. I know we're talking tackles right now, but I'm going to say offensive. I mean, I love that center out at Washington. Is it Oregon or Washington? Jackson, I think his name is. I take him if I'm the Bears and just start him for the next 10 years and forget about it. I don't know. That's just my thinking because I'm seeing where the game's at, and it's just as valuable inside nowadays.
Dave, I'm seeing that kid going as high as 19 or 20, and a center in the first round would really be unusual, but that's how well thought of he is. And also, I apologize, Dave, because I didn't warn you about this or hadn't mentioned it to you, but it just occurred to me as I'm listening to you and Dan, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have never had this explained to them, but what separates a left tackle, which many consider the most important offensive line position in the NFL, from a right tackle? What's the difference that causes one to be on one side or the other?
Okay. Our team could have been a perfect illustration of the different qualities or characteristics. The right tackle was first-round pick, Keith Van Horn. Van Horn was 6'7", 300 pounds, and he was like a run-blocking masher. That was, if you had to rate his strengths, it was coming off the ball, moving people. Now, he was good in pass protection, not super, but good enough. But most teams are right-handed running, okay? Quarterback's right-handed, everybody. It's almost like invariably, I think they did a survey, and it was like 58% of the plays go right, 42% go left. Why, for whatever reason, I don't know. But the right tackle, bigger, stronger. In fact, I played that in high school. Our left tackle was a little more nifty. Well, the Bears had Jimbo Covert, a first-round pick, I think the sixth pick in the first round. Jimbo was 6'4", 290, and was tremendous. And in my era, I thought, there was a handful of guys that I thought were considered the best players of that decade. And Lawrence Taylor probably, in my mind, was the best defensive player of that decade. And every time he played Jimbo Covert, he got shut out. That tells you how good Jimbo was. Now, today, guys like Crosby, they go back and forth. The kid in Detroit, they flop him around. They're trying to look for a weak link. All I'm saying is, John Ault, to me, is a right tackle. And if you're thinking about the Bears drafted, well, they drafted right out of Tennessee. And that's almost case in point different. He is bigger, stronger, not as nifty, not as good in space as Coach aptly put it a few minutes ago. But I don't know. I haven't watched. I got to tell you, I think the Bears are kind of thinking that they're going to almost get better by osmosis, keeping who they have and getting better and probably going to go with a receiver. But I don't know. As you said, Hub, that the backside left tackle for most right-handed quarterbacks, yeah, it's the most important. But, Coach, you brought up a great point. Yeah, everybody's going 3-step, now 5-step. But guess what? With these big corners jamming receivers, you're going to have to buy a little more time. You're going to have to go to more 7. It's a cat and mouse game, so it'll be fun to watch.
Dave, is there a particular position group in this draft that looks like the weakest to you, or at least the one that doesn't have the most to offer, or has jumped out at you by you need, you know teams that need one, and where are they going to find one?
Well, the defense, the pass rushers, and I don't know who canceled the word defensive end. Who canceled that? Okay, in today's society, no one ever says defensive end before. Now, it's all edge, right? He's an edge. Everybody's looking for an edge guy, whatever that is. It's obviously a pass rusher, but there's not a Will Anderson as a pass rusher in this draft. And I've watched the top five or six already. And, and I rank the one guy that I probably put at the top just because of his combine work. And I'm not going to go into all these. Dallas Turner, the kid from Alabama, he ran 4.4 something, and he's 6'3". He plays like a crazy man, hard, really hard. But he doesn't use his hands very good. He gets blocked on running plays too much for me. I looked at the Latu kid at UCLA, the Verse kid at Florida State, Chop Robinson at Penn State, Darius Robinson at Missouri. I mean, these guys, they all have something that you like and something that you don't like. So to answer your question, Hub, and keep it short, you got to look at all these guys and where would they fit on your defense? Don't take this kid here, Dallas Turner, and expect him to play on a 300-pound offensive lineman the whole game and get off of blocks. It ain't happening. Play him in kind of a 3-4 where he's out there on the edge and you can bring him and he's athletic enough to cover. You got something. But there is not Will Anderson, which obviously is a dominant player now playing for the Texans out of Alabama. There's not one of those guys, in my opinion, in this year's draft with the edge guys, whatever the edge guys are.
Folks, Dave just mentioned Leatu Latu from UCLA, and you've probably heard about him. He's one of the three best edge rushers in this draft. But what a great story. 3.5 years ago, had neck fusion surgery, was at the University of Washington, and was told he could never play football again. Washington said that they would not pass him physically to play. He took a year off. He actually took a year and a half off, went to UCLA, and became arguably the best pure pass rusher in this draft. So, just a really great story to watch, because I think he will be the first edge rusher off the board based on the way he's been climbing up draft boards really since the combine. But Dan, I want to come back to you now and get to your turn this week with your question of the week, if you will.
Well, the one thing that kind of keeps jumping out to me is, and we kind of touched on it just a minute ago, all of these teams, they're still scrambling, trying to find a way to not only improve their roster, but, kind of get it in a semblance of a pecking order of where they can make a run at, the Super Bowl. And the two teams that jump out at me that did the best job through free agency of maintaining what they have, their status quo, and yet going out and filling some holes was Detroit and the Texans. And the Texans, you think about this. We touched on it about C.J. Stroud and how they came out of nowhere with him. But think how much better they're going to be with Joe Mixon. Now, Joe Mixon, whether you like him or hate him, he was very effective, especially when, Joe Burrow's had that offense going. But to have that kind of dual capacity in the backfield behind C.J. Stroud will be invaluable. Okuda, their defense obviously could stand, some talent upgrades. But Danielle Hunter, I got to tell you, this guy has been, in my mind, maybe the best defensive lineman in the NFC North for the last 3-4 years. Obviously, the kid in Detroit this past year, I can never remember his name. The big kid from Michigan. What's it?
Aiden Hutchinson?
In Detroit.
Yeah, Aiden Hutchinson.
Aiden Hutchinson, yeah. Who I really, really appreciate his game. But Danielle Hunter has averaged, 11, 12 sacks the last 3-4 years? I mean, to bring a pure specimen and put him on that defense, and D'Amico Ryans has got it going. Again, think about this. The Bills, did they get better? No, they got raided. Cincinnati, did they get better? Not in my mind. Boy, the Dallas Cowboys coach, what Jerry's asleep at the wheel. The Cowboys did virtually nothing throughout free agency. Yeah, they're paying, you know, they're paying their quarterback $60 million for what we saw in the playoffs. That's crazy. But Miami got pillaged. They didn't get better. So when you strip it all away, this is what it's about. Do you get better as a team when you come out of free agency? And only about three, four teams in my mind made that big jump to get better. And yet, despite all that, the Kansas City Chiefs virtually doing nothing because of you-know-who stays at the very pinnacle of the Super Bowl winning odds for 2025. I think it's remarkable.
Guys, we're running a little long this week, but I promised at the time I would get to this, and I want to wrap with this if I can. Again, nothing negative to say about Caleb Williams. I think he's got a great chance to be a franchise quarterback. But I believe that the best quarterback out of this draft will be McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy. And it's not because I'm a Michigan alum. I promise you that. Although it is in part because I've watched every one of his 28 games, usually two or three times, studied him a lot. And the two players he reminds me of the most, one is Patrick Mahomes. He plays the game the same way Mahomes does. But the other one he reminds me of even more is Tom Brady, who is the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. And it's more, again, because of the off-the-field stuff, the mental stuff. He is an athlete that matches up, you know, with Williams and May and Daniels. But it's the off-the-field stuff where he's the best of the bunch. And he has been working weekly with Tom Brady since the beginning of the 22 season. So, you know, he's my guy who's just, he's flown up these lists. A lot of, you know, drafts, mock drafts, not that I take them that seriously, but they're worth looking at. Had him in the top of the second round until the combine. Since the combine, now a lot of them have him drafted as high as number 6 or number 7. A lot of people saying, you know, that the Giants are in love with him. Some people saying the Patriots might take him. So I think McCarthy is the guy who has climbed up those lists the most. And then I mentioned Latu, who's also climbed way up lists in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, I guess I'll come to you first, David. Is there a guy that you've been watching or hearing about who really has jumped up, who is going to go a lot higher than anybody expects?
Yeah, I really like this. Quinyon Mitchell, the corner from Toledo. I think this guy, some people have, I looked at all these corners, and yeah, the Arnold kid and the Wiggins, Arnold at Alabama and Wiggins at Clemson, they're household names. You know, they're all going to get the hype. This kid at Toledo, he's a mature kid. He led the nation. He was in the top three the last 2 years with passes defended. I've never seen a guy break up passes like him. And he is a good tackler. He can play the slot. He can play the nickel. I think he'd be a great safety if you wanted him. So I would go with the Mitchell kid from Toledo, the defensive back, the corner.
Dan, I'm feeling better about things because Mitchell was the third kid on my list, and I couldn't agree with Dave more. And I think the only reason that he wasn't rated higher is because he played at Toledo, and nobody knew, you know, how to really measure his competition. But is there another guy or one of those guys that you're focused on who you've really watched jump up the last couple of weeks?
Well, we started off, we were talking about Marvin Harrison, and obviously I think, he has all the credibility and credentials. But I'm personally pulling for the receiver out of Washington, Dunze. You go back and you watch the way he moves and ran routes at the combine. You're talking about Larry Fitzgerald. It's like a bigger, faster, stronger Larry Fitzgerald. He's the kid that as every week goes by, to me, I think he will be, you know, obviously valued more and more and more. I'm hoping he falls to 9. Love to see our Chicago Bears get him.
You know, that's interesting because his quarterback in college is Michael Penix Jr., is one of those top 6 quarterbacks who I think is probably rated a little bit high. And if he now lands with one of those other quarterbacks, Odunze could catch up to Harrison. Who knows? But it's a little late, guys. We ran long this week. I apologize to our listeners, if we ran too long, we'll try not to. But thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back again next week. And we're going to spend the next 5 weeks continuing to focus on, there's going to be a few more big moves in free agency, but it's mainly about the draft. And we'll have a lot more to report for you next week. But for now, have a great week, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us. And we'll talk to you again soon.